Good afternoon. My name is Mike Mattuzzi. I'm the founder of Contemporary Spirituality, and I'm here this afternoon with my good friend, Dan Dobbins. Just a little bit about Dan. We met through Father William Menninger, a Trappist monk who has been out and about leaving the monastery, giving retreats for years, and Dan has really been helping Father Menninger do that for years outside the monastery. So, with that said, Dan, good to visit with you again, and let's start in the beginning. Tell us a little bit about growing up.
Well, thanks, Mike. It's good to be with you. In fact, Father William and I had such great times those 3 years we were out there in Kansas City, and you're taking us on the Yellow Brick Road tours through Kansas and Missouri.
Yes, that was fun.
Yeah. I was a military brat. My father was a Marine, went up to World War II, Vietnam, retired. So we moved around every 2 years. And one of the great experiences I had was we lived in Quito, Ecuador, when I was in the 7th and 8th grade. So this would have been like 1961 to 63. So still pretty much an undeveloped country back in those days. And I attended a school called Alliance Academy. It was a private school run by missionaries. And they would have the missionary kids live on a compound there. They taught them while their parents were out in various countries through Central and South America. But it was a wonderful time living in Ecuador around the State Department people, along the indigenous people, along with the Ecuadorians themselves, and then being around missionary kids. And it was a great influence on my life. So another thing is that I've been a lifelong Christian. I grew up believing, having a thirst for God. I can remember in the 3rd grade receiving my Bible on the steps, being outside on the steps of the church there in Roanoke, Virginia, and waiting for my mother to come by to pick me up there from her class. And I just remember feeling loved by God. It was just a feeling that swept over me. So I've always felt loved by God, and my journey has been one of a servant within the Christian faith.
Yes, and you've had a near-death experience that you've shared with me before. Tell the listeners about that, if you will.
Yeah, I think they would be interested in that, Mike. I've shared that with obviously with church groups and with people who have lost loved ones. I was 20 years old at the University of Florida. I was getting ready to head into my senior year, and I was working construction. I worked construction every year just to, you made good money working construction, and it went towards, you know, my school. But I was working for Quality Drywall Construction, not too far from the campus. And short story on that is that, we were hanging drywall, and I was using a hand drill. Well, everybody knew that drill had a bite to it, and it fell on the temporary people like myself and this other college kid to use that drill that day. It was my turn to use that, and I became the ground. When I popped the screw into the drill and grabbed the aluminum stud, I completed that circuit. And, Mike, it was like being stuck by a billion needle points, horrendous pain. I knew I was being electrocuted. And I never forget the conversation I had with God. Of course, this is just a millisecond, right? A second in eternity. You've got that denial. Do you know who you have? Please don't do this to me. The bargaining, thinking how sad my parents would be. Lord, please don't let me die. I'm just going into my senior year now, but there came a point where I couldn't withstand all the pain, and I surrendered my life, and I basically said, Lord, I'm sorry for not living up to your expectations of me, and I surrendered my life because I couldn't stand the pain anymore. And Mike, and to your listeners, I'll never forget walking down to the dark river of death, its chill waters dampening my feet. And at my end time, I was met by a loving, caring, compassionate God who embraced me with a love that's beyond all human understanding. And I knew that I was at home.
Mm.
Well, the rest of the story I'm told. Actually, there happened to be a fireman on the job that day, and his name was Ernie Reichert. He got fireman of the year that year for saving my life. That him, and through God's grace that he was there that day. They called him. They got me unwrapped from the electrical current. He massaged my face, opened my jaw, gave me mouth-to-mouth, did CPR. I went into cardiac arrest twice. This is 1970, no HIPAA and all that. So the hospital's not but maybe three or four blocks down. I wake up in the hospital on the gurney. On the way there in the ambulance, I wake up and I say, don't tell my mother, she'll be upset. Next thing I remember that your viewers might be interested in is that I woke up on the table in the gurney in the emergency room, and I had an out-of-body experience. Mm-hmm. I remember looking down on myself on the gurney. I see the team of doctors and nurses with all the machines trying to stabilize me. There's my parents and my young brother out there. There's the co-workers. And I'm looking down and I'm saying, you don't need to do that. I found my peace. I don't want to come back. But fortunately, you know, I did, I guess. I came back, and the doctor asked me if I could move my legs. I said, please, Lord, don't let me be paralyzed. I moved my legs. I spent the night in the hospital, got $100 workers' compensation benefits, and the rest is history. There's a little follow-up to that, Mike, I think, that your listeners might like.
Yes.
That is about 20 years after that. Mike, you and I are both lawyers.
All right.
But I was down in Gainesville. I'm in Tallahassee. So Gainesville's about 3 hours from Tallahassee, the state capital. And about 20 years after this, of course, back in those days, you can't really talk about this stuff. You could, but people think you're nuts. But anyway, I went by. I was taking a doctor's deposition down in Gainesville. And after the deposition, I went by to see Dr. Cunningham, who was my neurologist. My mother was a pink lady at the hospital. Had stayed in touch with him through the years. I walk into his office unannounced. His nurse says, hey, wait a minute. She goes back. And next thing I know, Dr. Cunningham runs out from his office, gives me a big hug and says, Dan, I'm so happy to see you. Takes me in the back and says, you know, of all the electrical cases, the electrical shock cases I've ever treated, only two of you lived and you shouldn't have, and you ought to be blind. And here I am today, Mike, at 71, still going. So I've been given an extra 50. I've been given an extra 51 years.
Yeah, and that $100 work comp benefit maybe got you started in your law career. That ever since I've known you, you've been on the verge of retiring. And then we talked 2 weeks ago, and you were on the verge. Are you retired now, or are you still on the verge of retiring?
I just gave notice. Yep, I'm going to retire December the 1st after 42 years.
All right, you're really retiring this day. All right, let me move you forward. You had my notes are tracking kind of about 20 years ago, gone through a divorce. You and I both share that experience, going through a divorce, and you had kind of a religious experience out of that. I think that kind of started you on a new journey that eventually intersected with Keating and Menninger, but I may not have that exactly right. Speak to that, if you will.
Sure. No, I think you have it exactly right, because you and I shared that. I remember you're calling me from Snowmass when you met Father Menninger. And I think that's your story. But I remember you're calling me saying that Father Menninger said call you for you to call me, because by that time I was traveling with Father William. About 1999, so it's been, 20 years ago, 21 years ago, I went through a second divorce. And nothing I wanted, but you know what Richard Rohr says, we're brought to this journey either through great suffering or through great love. And most of us come to it through great suffering. Well, that was my route. But I was on my knees up in my bedroom. My then wife had left. My two daughters that I had raised mostly had gone over to Jacksonville to be with their mother for high school. And it was just that that deep, deep despair, you know, that we've all known, right, at our ages. Right. And I'll never forget, I was up on my knees begging God for mercy, you know, please send her back, you know, my kids, and, you know, I miss them. And it was just loneliness, right, just despair. And it was a depth, that's the lowest depth I can remember. And I'm on my knees begging for mercy. And I'll never forget this either, Mike. Out of nowhere, I didn't see God, you know, God, but God made known to me these words, clear as a bell. Dan, is that all you want out of your life? Let me show you what life can be with me. And kaboom, it was a thunderbolt of love. It was like a billion suns bursting. And it was like, I told Father Keating this. I took some spiritual direction from Thomas Keating out at the monastery. And I said, Thomas, I hope you'll forgive me. But the only way I know how to describe this is, it was like a divine orgasm. And, you know, Mike, he laughed, yeah, and he smiled because he knew. So that turned me to the inner journey. I ended up out at Snowmass, just on a lark, you know, just following the Spirit. I'd been going to Christ in the Desert in New Mexico, and I found this monastery in Colorado. I didn't know St. Benedict's. I didn't know centering prayer. But I ended up out there, you know, one Christmas back around 2003. And it, you know, I had some experiences out there, some spiritual experiences. My journey, Mike, has been for a long time. It was like St. Teresa of Avila, exuberant mysticism. It was a gift. But I ended up at the monastery, met Father Keating, went out there on several, you know, 10-day retreats, kept going, you know, year after year. And I eventually met Father Menninger, but that's a different story. So,
beautiful. Let's go to the Father Menninger story if we can. How did you meet William, as we call him? And how did that all start up with suddenly you're kind of the go-to person for him traveling throughout the country?
Well, Father Keating told me on one of my spiritual direction class or meetings, sessions, he told me, Dan, based on my experiences, he said, Dan, you've been invited to the great banquet feast. Do you know how you want to serve? Well, you know, Mike, I had no idea. I mean, I'd done all the church work here, been an elder in the Presbyterian church, and, you know, done all the officer stuff, done all the deacon stuff, the elder stuff, but I didn't know. But one day I called from Tallahassee, I called Father Keating, because I want to go travel with him. You know, it's, you know, just what I like to do. I'm an international traveler, been to 80 countries, lived abroad. But I don't think I reached him that day, or we didn't connect. But anyway, long story short is, I heard a monk from Snowmass was coming to Destin, Florida, which is the panhandle for us. It's a beach area about 3 hours west of Tallahassee. And, well, I was in. If there's a monk coming from Snowmass Monastery, I'm going over there. It's about a three-hour drive. I went over there. You know, Mike, it's pretty much like we did with William, putting on those workshops. He was doing an Enneagram workshop, a process of forgiveness workshop, and a centering prayer workshop. And he was giving a parish retreat at a Catholic church over there, Church of the Resurrection in Myanmar. And I was so taken, Mike, with his talks, I called up one of the women that I had met, and I said, you know, I would love to come back over there and just go out to lunch with him one day and take him to lunch because I have some questions. I was really deep into the journey. You know, so much is happening. You're going through all these spiritual experiences. You know, you're devouring books right and left. You're deep into prayer, into meditation. You know, God is changing your understanding of things. The rector here called it altered states of consciousness. He told me one day after lunch. So I was going through all this, but I needed some help, right? Well, they said, yeah, sure, you can come back and take him out to lunch. Well, I about 3 days before I was going back over there to have this hour with him, Barbara calls me up and says, Dan, the couple that was supposed to spend the weekend with him can't do it. They've needed to back out. Would you mind spending the weekend with Father Menninger? I said, no, of course not. And that's so I spent the weekend with him. I went over and listened to him for the parish retreat. We're getting ready to go out for the weekend, and he announces to everybody there. I knew the parish priest. He says, I don't know who this guy is, but he's been following me around. So if I don't come back, somebody get his name and his license plate. Well,
vintage William.
It is, isn't it? Yeah, get his name. So, Mike, we get in the car, right? He doesn't know me from Adam's house cat. I don't know him. Here I'm with this well-known monk, right? And we're driving off, and he says, okay, Dan, tell me about your journey. And I said, well, it was, you know, just grace, Holy Spirit. And he says, don't give me that crap. Tell me about your journey. So I told him the particulars. Well, he knew that I was okay. We spent the weekend together, had a good time. You know, I took him out, entertained him. And, you know, he loves to go out and eat, right, Mike? You know that.
Oh, yeah.
A great, great conversationalist. And then I was so taken with him. I said at the hotel that morning for breakfast, I said, William, I'd love to have you come back to Tallahassee. Would you consider coming back to Tallahassee someday? And he said, sure. He says, you know, let me know. Usually it takes about a year. Just, you know, go back and let me know. Well, Mike, I came back. And within about 10 or 11 months, we had to come to Tallahassee. And we had a very ecumenical retreat. We had three churches or four churches here sponsoring them, a Presbyterian, two Methodist churches, a Catholic church, and the Episcopal church. So we had four or five churches. And, you know, Mike, he's come back to Tallahassee 8 years in a row before he stopped traveling.
Yeah.
And so he came here. People loved him. He built up a community. It's like St. Paul. I became Timothy with him in many ways with his traveling. But it just grew from that one trip. He needed help with his, you know, booking airline tickets. He needed help putting his retreats together. You know, Would you like to travel with me? Yes, I would. Of course I would. So we left. He had permission from the abbot. You knew Joe, Joseph Boyle, probably the finest abbot in the Trappist order, who died early. So we would go off every quarter to travel around the country and outside the country. You met us 1 year down at the Hindu ashram down in the Bahamas. You met us down there 2 years, I think.
Right.
Yeah. So we crisscrossed the country. You invited us out to Kansas City. So in my travels with him, I got to meet people from all over the country on this contemplative journey, and who are doing mostly centering prayer. But you take the big cities from Seattle, Tacoma, San Francisco, LA, San Diego, Dallas, Fort Worth, Denver, Boulder, New Orleans, all over, you know, Boston. Here in Tallahassee, we did Mobile. So we've done Chicago, probably Kansas City, St. Louis. I mean, we had all big places, and then then smaller cities as well. And then we'd go down to a Hindu ashram down in the Bahamas. And they loved him down there. They're so open to other traditions. And I don't know how you felt, Mike, but William and I both felt that was such a loving community down there. And I remember the swamis. And one in particular, these are mystics, right? These are swamis. These are senior Hindu people coming to see William. It was like Nicodemus coming to see Jesus in the middle of the night, right, to get a teaching.
Yeah.
And I remember, and I don't know if you remember, but boy, whenever we would leave there, they would have all the swamis, they'd have all the karma yogis there all lined up with us. And it was a parade, you know, out of the ashram, and you know, they'd take us to the airport.
Yeah, yeah. So my little sliver of that is you were kind of the national guy. I was for 3 years, a Missouri-Kansas guy. So 2014, 2015, 2016, you were up here. And we had those two extended years where, you know, I put William had the first floor. I went upstairs you had the basement, you know, and we just went all over Missouri and Kansas, and that was kind of our base, doing these little retreats. But I do remember two years at the ashram, and they had a panel of speakers from all different faiths addressing, yes, as I recall it, other subjects, and then they would let, you know, all the speakers have meals together, and William was typically center stage, you know, holding court, and as all of these very esteemed speakers came in, and it was fascinating to watch.
Oh, it was, wasn't it? The first year, I don't think you were with us the first year, but the first year, their tradition there is the speaker is they kind of install them as, quote, the guru, you know, the teacher.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget them carrying them down on a chair, you know, and just the initial, you know, that chanting. And, Mike, I don't know if you were with us that trip or not, but we got invited to go back and celebrate with the Swamis. It was the birthday of their guru who had died. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's not like the Trappist, you know, when Keating died, they cleared out his room. They don't want people coming there, you know,
right?
Doing a pilgrimage to his room. But their guru's room was the same. His shoes were there. We came in. They did a puja, this big prayer thing, and we're there meditating with them. What an experience that was, you know. And they're burning incense, and you're back in their guru's bedroom back there in this cottage, you know, with all the chanting and the incense, and on his birthday. Just a great experience. You know, I did over 100, couple hundred retreats with Father William. But going down to the ashram, each like people everywhere that I met, I used to tell people, they'd say, Dan, how did you get this job? You know, we want this job. How did you get this job? And, you know, my response was, you know, God has a sense of humor when he calls a twice divorced Presbyterian lawyer to keep a Trappist monk out of a ditch.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I tell you, the banter back and forth between you two and the three of us on these trips was just wonderfully rich. He does have a great sense of humor. How about addressing these two? Because I think so many of the listeners know Father William, and, you know, many here in Kansas City, I'm sure all over, know you as well, Dan. But just maybe a couple things you've learned from William, and then I know he's still teaching, you know, more via Zoom, but speak to that too, because I know you're still helping him get the word out.
Yeah. We started Zoom conferences in April, and there's a YouTube link and that you can find his teachings. There's some great teachings on there. William is really maturing. You can tell that he's transcending as a monk. He's now 88, just turned 88 on August the 29th. You can see that wisdom. He's probably one of the greatest wisdom teachers of our day, right? He has that.
Yep.
He also has that. He has that personality too, that people love him because he's so approachable. So I'd like to a couple of things I learned. I've learned so much. We're such good friends. I talk with him now once or twice a week. He's gone nearly blind now. He can barely see out of his left eye. We stopped traveling together 2 years ago because he'd lost his sight. He had some back surgery. You'll remember this when the abbot died. This is a coincidence. Here we are in October talking. In October, the abbot died at Snow Mass. A few days Abbot Joseph Boyle, a great, great fellow, just a wonderful man, much beloved. So I was out there for that funeral. If you've ever seen a Trappist monk buried, it's a sight to behold and to be a part of. Because they bury him, you know, he's set there on this, you know, on this wooden plank, and he's lowered there with his habit on into the ground, and everybody goes by and throws a shovel full of dirt at his feet, you know, and then the dirt moves up towards his head. It's just it's a moving ceremony. With William, But now, by the way, your viewers may not know this. Let me come back to this to Snowmass, and I'll tell a few more stories about what I've learned from him and people might be interested in. So the abbot dies. William, in 2 years ago, has health issues. He can't go back to the monastery at Snowmass, which is about 8,200 feet elevation, because of respiratory issues. He's down at 6,000 feet in a rehab center. I'm going down there to visit him. I'm taking him back up to the monastery for services. But Keating dies. And then maybe your listeners know this, but he and Keating were at Spencer Abbey. You know, monasteries are named. It's St. Joseph's Abbey. It's about an hour and a half west of Boston, but it's Spencer, Massachusetts, so they call it Spencer Abbey. That's the mother house, and Snowmass is one of their daughter houses. They have four daughter houses. But this is the big mother house, and there is a health wing that they built attached to this beautiful monastery. It's like being in the rolling hills of Italy, you know, 14th century there. So if your listeners have never been to Spencer, it's worth when the monastery opens up, it's worth going to. So Keating's in a room there. There's 17 beds there. Keating dies. People then, you know, they're planning his funeral. The room opens up. The abbot's died. Menninger's at rehab. Can't go back to Snowmass. Keating dies. Opens up the only room at Spencer where William first started out, right? He spent 40 years at Snowmass. He probably spent 8 or 12 there at Spencer. And just as God would have it, Keating's room on the health wing opens up where they have 24/7 care, finest care you'll find. So William and I get on an airplane. I take him to Boston. He slips in to Thomas Keating's room. Mm. Well, so people are now beginning, you know, they're preparing Keating. They're having a big mass for him. But in the infirmary wing itself, there's a small chapel. Of course, there's a small dining room, and there's a small chapel there. Well, Keating's body is laying in this chapel, waiting for the 24-hour vigil, and then waiting for his mass. Well, William says it's our tradition not to leave a body unattended. So William and I go in and sit with Thomas's body so it's not unattended for hours at a time. And I spent an hour by myself with Thomas Keating's body. And then 24 hours before the mass, there's a 24-hour vigil. So he's taken down to the main church. His body lies what we would call in state in the secular terms. And then there's a 24-hour vigil. Well, William and I take the midnight, I think either 11 to midnight or midnight to 1 a.m., and then some other people, a monk let in some other people by the side door, and you can see them sitting. Just, of course, it's candles and things, and we're just sitting there with Thomas's body. The next day, there's a big funeral, and everybody's there, full church and everything, big reception afterwards. But one of our friends from Contemplative Outreach, Maru, many of your listeners would know Maru because she does the South American Brazilian piece, Mexico piece for Contemplative Outreach International Limited. She says, Dan, did you get the transmission from Thomas? No, I didn't get any transmission from Thomas. but, you know, Mike, a year later, I was going up to see William about every 3 or 4 months. Of course, yeah. I was going up to Spencer. He couldn't travel, so I was going up to see him, and we'd go out and do things. But I went back in that same small chapel where we had sat with Thomas's body, and we went in there for the mass on the health wing. Mm-hmm. And you know, Mike, I sat in almost that same chair, looking in the same direction where Thomas's body was lying there waiting for his own burial mass. And I'll never forget, I felt Thomas's presence. Mm-hmm. I just felt his presence, and it stayed with me, you know, for hours. It wasn't something I was expecting. So I didn't get any transmissions a year before that, but I did that day unexpectedly. So I think your listeners, I think we all know the gifts come when you least expect them. Yeah. I don't know how much more time you have left, but I can share some things from William.
Okay. Yeah. How about some nuggets along the way that you picked up that are, you know, important that you'd be willing to share with the listeners?
Yeah. We were going at it. You know, the monks' motto, Trappist, is ora et labora, labor and prayer. And let me tell you, that labor, they mean it. I mean, they're working all the time, except for on Sundays, right? But they're working all the time. It's just, it's work or prayer, right? And they're going at it. I've been around them. There's no very little downtime. And holy leisure means, you know, holy leisure is, you know, not meditating, but lexio or something. But one year, while doing these retreats, we were out in Seattle. And it's early in the morning, you know, we've been crisscrossing the country. William's in his 80s. You know, I'm probably 15, 17 years younger than William, 17 years younger than him. We're having early breakfast. And I said to him, William, he's doing interviews here. He's putting on workshops. He's meeting people. We're going to lunches and dinners. I mean, it's from sun up to late at night, right? And I said, William, how do you keep up, you know, the schedule? And he says, looking at me at breakfast, he looks across the table and he says, Dan, everything I do stems from centering prayer.
Mm.
Everything I do stems from my centering prayer. And I think in my own life now, I'm just a neophyte. I've only been doing centering prayer now for about 17, 18 years now. But I can see where it's made such a difference in my life. I mean, it's been the game changer for me. So for William, having been a priest for 60 years now, 60 or over 60, a Trappist monk for over 50, everything he does comes from centering prayer. And something else, Mike, the last thing I'll leave with your listeners, depending on our time here, is that his teaching now is, and this, he was on retreat one year, and it came from a sister, from a nun. And he was doing some spiritual direction. He's in a small office. We all know these little small offices, you know, at these monasteries or at these churches. And he hears this knock, knock, knock at the door. And the door opens, and in walks this very old nun, bent over, cane, and William says these words exactly. He says, I knew she was about to speak the word of God to me.
Mm.
She walks across, saunters across that room, plops down in that little chair across from his desk, and looks at him and says these words, you know, Father, everything is a grace. Everything, everything, everything. And that has stayed with William all these days, and it still does. It's one of his most important lessons that he's learned. And he says, too, he just said recently on a Zoom conference with us, that God is teaching him more wisdom, and he knows that's just a gift, and that his teachings are coming from above and not from him.
Mm. Rich stuff. Like you and I talked last time, I tell you, we got to catch a flight and meet in Boston and drive down and see him. It would be fun to get face to face with him. Let's say, Dan, that folks are listening and they go, boy, I want to follow along with what William is doing. How would they get on that list, that email list, so they could get notifications of upcoming speaking events, which I think are all free, aren't they?
They are free. Yep. We'd ask for a free will donation to Spencer, but we're not going to do that anymore. We just did, in fact. We just did a virtual retreat with Spencer Abbey 2 weeks ago. It was for a small group of 25 people. I think, Mike, maybe the best way is for them to email you their address and you forward it to me. and we'll put him on. We'll put him on the mailer. What he's doing now is he's doing one talk a month on the second Saturday at 4 p.m. East Coast time. And if you're not able to make that, then we've created a YouTube link, and all of his talks are on the YouTube link. And I think, Mike, you might get that flyer, but if they'll send you their email, if you think that would be the easiest thing to do,
Wanted
to send me theirs, or I can give you my email address for them to send it to me.
Sure. Why don't we cut out the middleman, which would be me, and if you're comfortable, just give your email address now, and then as we put this on our website, it'll be there if they want to follow up.
Sure. It's my name. It's Dan, D-A-N, Dobbins, D as in David, O-B-B as in boy, I-N-S, Dan Dobbins, and then the number 10, 10, Dan Dobbins, 10, at gmail.com, D-A-N-D-O-B-B-I-N-S, 10, at gmail.com.
Outstanding.
We'd be delighted for them to join us. Yeah. William's done retreats here for Brazil. By the way, that Brazil talk we're trying to get on his website too, but he revealed for the first time where he was in the journey. I've never heard him, Mike. He never talked very much where he was in the journey, but he talked
right.
that he revealed for the first time where he was. Incredible stuff. Well, thank you for this opportunity, Mike. And I've enjoyed my time out there with you and meeting your friends and your spiritual journey folks out there. What a great time we had in Kansas and Missouri. I had your t-shirt on yesterday, Mike, when I was on my walk on your Yellow Brick Road, Kansas Mo, with Father William.
Yeah, we had t-shirts for the 15 Mocan Tour and 15 and the 2016 Mocan Tour. That's great. All right. Well, thank you, Dan, for your time. Appreciate everything you do. And we will get this posted on the website, and we'll go from there until we speak again, huh?
Well, thanks, Mike. What a pleasure it is to visit with you and with your listeners. And I look forward to us continuing our visits.
Likewise. Fantastic. Thanks, Dan.